Well, we get the show underway this afternoon by welcoming into the program the CEO of Conservation International and the host of a three-part series that premieres on PBS next week called Life at the Waterhole. Carrie had a chance to talk earlier today with Dr. M. Sanjan.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
This documentary is different in one major way in that you constructed the waterhole so you could have more camera usage and really control what you were able to view. Can you explain that unique nature of this look at the incredibly important ecosystems of African waterholes?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one way in which this thing was different, but I honestly will tell you, this is different in lots and lots of ways. I've done lots of television shows for PBS and Discovery and everyone else, but never done a show quite like this. So we constructed a waterhole with the permission of the owners of this this reserve on the edge of the Serengeti. You know, Serengeti is sort of this vast grasslands in East Africa where you see the big wildebeest migrations and the thundering herds of, you know, 500,000 animals go by you. But around it are reserves. Some of them are community-owned, and there's been lots of conflict for water between some of the communities, human communities, and wildlife. Mm. That's the place where, you know, elephants or lions and people and cattle combine and collide. So as a way of alleviating some of that pressure, the folks who run this reserve, Mwiba Wildlife Reserve, decided with the permission of the communities to build a waterhole. When we heard about this, we thought, great, let's put all the cameras up there. We put 20 cameras, you know, 5 miles of optical cable, and we sat there and watched it because no one had ever done that. No one had ever sort of, you know, created a waterhole and then literally sat there from day one to see what happens, to see how a waterhole evolves through time. And honestly, I didn't know what would happen. Maybe no one would show up. Obviously, we'd have no show if no one showed up.
So the initial idea of this wasn't the show. It was the preserve wanting to create a waterhole that was and reduce that conflict between human and wildlife.
Absolutely. Yeah, it isn't like we went to, oh, look, let's just go dig a hole and see what happens. We knew we were on the lookout for the construction of a waterhole in Africa. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of reserves do have it. Even some national parks in Africa have, you know, essentially, quote-unquote, artificial water sources as a way of managing wildlife or reducing conflict. And we came upon this great opportunity in an amazing part of the world where there are Maasai community members, there are the Hadza indigenous tribes, and also lots and lots of wildlife to see, you know, what would happen from day one. And as I said, you know, we turned on the cameras and we basically had enough time to get back to our hide, back to our tent, which is about 800 feet away from the waterhole, kind of hidden, and looked at the monitors, and you wouldn't believe this, but within 45 minutes of this thing, you know, being opened, we had our first visitor.
Wow.
And that was a family waterhole. And from that moment till the day I left, and we took everything down, there was a steady stream of wildlife. That was kind of blew me away. Because, you know, you do these shows, and most of the time, you're in a Jeep or in a helicopter, you're running around looking for animals, right? I mean, when you see something on, you know, television, you know, wildlife spectacle, what you don't realize is all the traveling that's been done just to get the cameraman in the right place, or the camera woman, I'd say, in the right place in order to take that shot. In this case, that didn't really happen. We sat in one place and let the wildlife come to us. So it's really almost perfect for, you know, the COVID lockdown that we've been going through.
Right,
this is
right.
Sit in place and watch and see. And it kind of blew us away.
Well, you mentioned the animals showing up right at the waterhole almost, you know, within an hour of it being, you know, the water being available. The structures that you guys put up got used. Been watching what footage I can of it. Talk a little bit about the pair of swallows that used your hide as a nesting site.
Yeah. So, you know, for wildlife, you know, human structures or natural structures are immaterial. If they can use it, they're going to use it. And over time, our own hides and structures and you know, our base camp basically got taken over by different types of wildlife. I mean, some of it makes it into the show. So a pair of swallows decided to fly into a narrow slit in a concrete bunker. So there's some of the cameras were placed really at water level, basically in the water. They were built almost into the side of the water hole. You know, you can imagine a swimming pool, and then you can imagine something at water level that was built in, and you'd go down steps and go sort of behind the scenes and then crawl into this thing. And these swallows would find a way to sort of slip through the small gap where the cameras were and build a nest, which was probably the safest place they could imagine. But we had, you know, lots of other things too. We had wasps come in and build nests. We had snakes. We had scorpions. We had whipped scorpions. And it was quite an exciting, you know, adventurous sort of day. One night we had lions take down, you know, I'm trying to think what it was. Probably a buffalo calf or something like that, right by our tents, just outside where we were. So quite exciting, but also amazing to see that behavior.
So the ecosystem just sort of immersed you into it as the animals came and populated the waterhole.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's really well put. And, you know, by the time the show had ended, we had had over 105 different species of animals visit the waterhole. We had something like 800 separate sightings of mammals alone. So, you know, you get all that behavior. It's not just one animal at a time at the waterhole. You get herds of 80-plus buffalo at the same time as elephants, or you get hyenas show up on one side, or everything goes really quiet, and all of a sudden a lion comes walking through the frame. We had, you know, owls come down and drink. I mean, it really got quite exciting at times. So we would also follow these animals back into the wild. I was working with an amazing cameraman, Bob Poole, quite famous cameraman, and he would, you know, get in a Jeep and basically follow some of these wildlife back to see where they go, like where are the hyenas denning, where are the lion cubs actually hidden. So you get that kind of behavior and the ebb and flow of the day at the waterhole.
We're talking with Dr. M. Sanjan, a conservation scientist and host of Life at the Waterhole, premiering May 19th on PBS. Now, the footage that I've seen is spectacular. And how was there any way that this could have been, the footage could have been gotten without this, you know, innovative idea of constructing the cameras before the waterhole even existed?
You know, I think that, I mean, you know, the television production has gone, like, you know, so amazing today, right? Things that we can do, the size of our cameras, the way we can deploy them. I mean, it's really quite extraordinary. I think that this was unusual. It would take sort of the BBC and PBS to collaborate to pull together something like this show. So it's not that the technology couldn't have been replicated, but, you know, not a lot of people will take a bet on something that essentially is unproven. Nothing might have showed up, or we could have had sort of, you know, three shows of kind of blank screen. It was a kind of a big gamble, and it paid off. It also required an enormous amount of patience. I mean, remember, you know, there was someone in those tents watching, or in sort of our HQ, watching that footage from, you know, 5 a.m. to probably midnight, when finally someone would turn off the cameras and come to bed. And then the cameras would still run through the night, and then we'd review that. So we were on it, and we spent an enormous amount of time collecting that kind of footage. And that takes patience, but that's where you see the behavior. That's where you get the surprises. One of the surprises is, you know, the most common visit to our waterhole, I would have never guessed this, wasn't elephant, wasn't buffalo, wasn't warthog. The most common visit were hyenas. They didn't really drink that much. They would show up, they'd hang around, and they would sit and watch. And after a while, it became apparent what they were doing. They were really looking. Every day, it's like going down to the grocery market to see what's on sale today.
Yeah.
Even if you're not shopping that day, because they're trying to identify who's weak, who's sick, who's injured, you know, who's a newborn. Like, where am I going to get an easy meal tonight? That was sort of stunning to me.
What do you hope people take away from viewing Life at the Waterhole?
You know, I think that's a good question. You know, I think animal behavior is so lost. You know, I think we are so much in a pursuit of just the highlights that we don't ever have the patience to sort of really sit and watch something slowly emerge and evolve. I think the lockdown that we've gone through as a nation has given us more sort of resilience to sort of look at what's happening, say, in our own backyard. And this is in some ways that. It gives you a view of the world in a most beautiful and kind of joyous way. It's life springing from a waterhole, but it almost in real time. I think people are getting amazing insight into animal behavior. But beyond that, you're also going to see the communities. We do visit with the Maasai. We talk to them about what's going on in their land. We see the conflict between Maasai and between wildlife. We see the struggle for water. We see what climate change is doing to that ecosystem, where animals are having to travel further for water, and people up under increasing pressure to find resources for their cows or for their lives. So you see so much. You see changing seasons. You know, when's the last time you watched a show where you actually see changing seasons? We started the dry season. We end it in the middle of the rainy season. And you watch that evolution. I kid you not, that waterhole looks entirely different in 6 months, simply because everything around it has changed. So I think this is like the perfect show for the moment we're in, as we sort of hopefully come out of this period of a year and a half of being stuck in place, to see how life progresses and evolves.
It looks like an amazing show. Thank you so much for being with us today, and looking forward to watching Life at the Waterhole.
Thank you.